Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at annexwealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation. Annex Wealth Management is a local fee-only fiduciary providing investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning. Know the difference. Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Is it mission accomplished? And what do the latest jobs numbers show? This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Happy Easter weekend. Great to have you here. I'm Jill Krause, Chief Economic Strategist. Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. Hey, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And CEO of Annex Wealth Management, Dave Spano.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, we had an interesting week. Of course, earlier in the week, we had Mr. Trump talking about the status of the war. We ended with a jobs report and heading into Easter weekend. There's certainly a lot to talk about. And let's just start with what the market perceived Mr. Trump said.
Sure. So when we look at what President Trump, when he was talking about, when he delivered that presentation from the White House, I think a lot of that was already widely anticipated. So I know some people in the media were talking about, oh, the market really didn't like what he said. But, you know, it actually was kind of leaked through various sources as to exactly what he was going to say throughout the week. And throughout the week, the market was reacting very positively to it. So yes, we did give a little bit back, but only part of it. You know, if you think about what the messaging there was, is that it's not really up to the United States to secure the Strait of Hormuz. Most of the oil that flows through there goes to India, China, maybe to Europe. Some of it does come to the United States, but not really a huge amount of it. And so it was really about what was the mission, the objective to really deal with the nuclear threat and also to disable their ability to launch attacks. I mean, they are the largest state sponsor of terrorism out there. And so it wasn't declaring mission accomplished, of course, but giving that timeline, saying that, no, maybe 2 to 3 more weeks. And then we also did hear about Iran working with Oman. So they're the ones that are on either side of the Strait of Hormuz coming up with some sort of protocol to allow vessels through there. The United Kingdom taking the lead as far as maybe they should provide some of the security for vessels. That was all, I think, quite a positive for the overall markets.
How about a pipeline that goes around it and really doesn't go through the Strait of Hormuz?
And Saudi Arabia, that's what they had built. They have a pipeline that goes from, I think it's the east to the west, so then it takes you over towards the Red Sea area. That has been, they filled that up. It has about a 7 million barrel per day capacity. Maybe they're going to want to expand.
So Saudi Arabia and Israel would have to get together. Even Iraq, that would be an interesting way around it. But, you know, you and I could talk about oil prices and what we think the market is reacting to, but there's a difference between spot oil prices and future oil prices, and we saw the mark go up substantially, over $140 a barrel.
Yeah, that was incredible to see some of these big swings during the day. So Brent crude, which is one of the global benchmarks. In the United States, we typically look at something called WTI, West Texas Intermediate Crude. Brent is more the global benchmark that they look at. And that shot up more than 10% in one day to 140 per barrel. And it's for what you said, spot, right? So that just means for immediate delivery. So if you're going there and you're, I'll give you the money, you give me the barrel. The futures, though, is about where you contract with locking in those prices for future delivery. That's why they're called futures contracts. And there's this huge difference between the spot price and the futures price. One way to interpret that is that the market is pricing in that this is going to probably be, let's say, another 30 days where then you could see the prices retreat. Another interpretation is that this is just showing the desperation for trying to get those barrels of oil for immediate delivery. So when you have the spot price significantly higher than the futures, it encourages companies, countries to get it out of inventory, get it out of the ground, to bring it to current market for delivery.
You know, I really want to go back to the financial crisis and the change in how United States, in particular, fracking, crude oil exports, all of those were really put in place to be a shock absorber for the rest of the world. And in fact, that is happening despite all of this turmoil.
It is. When we look at what's been going on with U.S. output, it's obviously the lowest hanging fruit. That's what you try to pump immediately. And U.S. producers have been able to fill some of that void. Not all of it, but at least some of it. They've been able to pick up in terms of with the extraction. In fact, in some parts, if you think about when you drill for oil and you extract it, you sometimes get like natural gas as a side product, right? Yeah. And so, great, you can sell that. In some areas, it's so profitable to pump the oil that they can almost give away the gas.
Or burn it off.
Yeah, they burn it off. Exactly. Right. They call that flaring it. Yeah. Right. And so that's kind of an incredible thing when you look at the market and the way that the oil market is connected to the natural gas market, which is connected to the fertilizer market and all these interconnections.
And now we ended the week with a jobs report. And, you know, we looked at the last couple of months. And of course, that really wasn't the trajectory that we're going, especially what we saw on Friday morning.
Yeah. So Friday morning, we got the numbers for March. And with that, it also contained revisions for the month of February and January. So that's what they typically do, right? The economic data, it's backward looking, subject to revision. But that March number was really good, plus 178,000. That was actually close to about triple what the average consensus was according to Bloomberg, right? So, I mean, it just kind of blew the consensus out of the water.
But there's some reasons that went into that, either what happened in the last 2 months really brought those numbers down.
That's right. Exactly. So February was revised lower. And we know in the month of February, that was, I think, originally reported about minus 92,000. Comes to find out, it was closer to minus 133,000. But we had that severe weather. I mean, snow blanketing most of the South and also the East Coast. That affects people's ability to get to work. It affects all sorts of seasonal activity. You then also had a large strike at a healthcare facility. So that affected the numbers by like 30,000. So February was very negative, but January was positive and revised even higher. And then you have March higher. So it's like you have high, low, high. That's why you smooth it out, right? You look at this moving average, like 3 month moving average. We're running at a clip of about 65,000 to 68,000 net payroll gains, which isn't bad. I mean, it's not like in the 90s where you would expect it to be 100,000, but population growth is a lot slower now. So, you know, I think that we did have that transition period in 2025. Average payroll growth was about 6,500. Now it's closer to 65,000. So it, I think, has taken a material move higher in terms of job gains.
So population growth is lower. Immigration is lower. Families are having less kids. Yeah. All of that goes into the numbers and that goes into GDP. Now, despite all of that, the GDP numbers are still expected to look good in the second half of the year.
Yes, they are. And even the current quarter, when we look at the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, they have their GDP now forecast thing. It's kind of like a now cast as far as where are we right now. And that improved because we've gotten some positive data. And then as we get through this, because this too shall pass in terms of the high gasoline prices, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, people are still making money. Jobs are being created. People are still spending in terms of consumption. You have all sorts of tax incentives from the One Big Beautiful Bill Act to incentivize the investment in property, plant, and equipment. You know, maybe we just go through a little bit of a lull in the economic activity in the first part of the year for a reacceleration in the second part.
You know, and that's exactly right. You talk about this too shall pass. This is, as we call in the investment business, incident risk.
Yes.
Right. And so you can't really manage money to an incident. However, there is mispricing or an opportunity to move your portfolio around. And that is exactly the reason why you should be going through this process to know what you own, why you own it, and how much you're paying for it.
Click that Get Started button at annexwealth.com. It's not just the button on our website. You can actually see all of the things we do and what it's like working with us. If recent headlines, like we were just talking about, are giving you some uncertainty, we can show you how all of this can affect your portfolio and how you can have a clear plan moving forward to gain more confidence. The whole team in-house who has your best interest in mind on your side at Annex. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Custom-tailored investment and retirement planning from a fee-only fiduciary. Know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Direct indexing is an investment approach that allows individuals to directly own the underlying stocks of an index rather than investing through a pooled fund. It's a different structure that allows for higher level of customization, such as excluding specific companies or industries and tailoring the portfolio to personal goals or values. It also supports tax efficiency and gives investors more control over after-tax outcomes. Somebody that is going to be talking about this with maybe some of the clients here at Annex Wealth Management, Senior Wealth Advisor, Certified Financial Planner, Mike Kirk is here. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Joe.
This is an interesting strategy. How does directly owning individual securities provide maybe greater flexibility compared to traditional index funds?
Yeah, I think the story starts there. In the investment world, there's lots of options as far as how to get access to the market. You can buy a individual stock, you can buy a portfolio of individual stocks, or what a lot of folks will do is to get that broad market diversification is they'll buy an index or an ETF. And between those three options, at the end of the day, you are likely holding all of the equities that you like. But with the ETF, you lose some of that control around when you start selling that asset.
So it's just a little bit more of a streamlined strategy. And what types of customizations might be able to be applied with a direct indexing portfolio, maybe to align with personal values or some financial objectives?
Yeah, and this is where the story gets really interesting. And I think the best way to understand this is to somewhat peel back the layers and understand what you own. And we talk about that a lot. Know what you own, right? So if you think of a commonly held ETF out there, VOO, VTI, spider indexes, you name them. These are S&P 500 correlated sort of ETFs, and they own all of the positions in the S&P 500. Or in, say, the Russell 1000 or 2000, 3000. These are these common indices. When it comes to your personal values, if you think about it, this is a basket of stocks, 500 wide, 1,000 stocks wide, or more. Some of those positions may not be up your personal preference alley as something that you want to own necessarily. So one of the attractive bullet points around direct indexing and even individual stock portfolios is I can exclude certain sectors, certain companies that I may not want to participate in. Whereas if you're looking just at VOO or VTI or Spider Index, you are stuck with those top positions, whether you like it or not.
And thinking about where your risk tolerance may be, in what ways can individual tax loss harvesting maybe improve after-tax investment performance?
Yeah, and I think this is where the story gets even deeper. You have that first, as we mentioned, that ability to control the portfolio as far as what you want to be invested in, but then it gets better with the tax situation. If I were to buy an indice like a Russell 1000, hold on to it for a number of years, it will likely appreciate. When I start selling that asset, I am selling the entire position that I have, meaning that it's a share of the Russell 1000. It owns 1,000 stocks. It has appreciated. When I'm selling it, I'm selling a fraction, an equal weighting of those 1,000 positions, and I'm stuck with all those gains. Over this timeline of being an investor, those stocks have moved up and some of the stocks in that ETF have moved down. When you start looking at direct indexing, you can start taking opportunities without having to sell the whole lot and get into creative tax strategies where you would be maybe selling your high gainers, offsetting those gains with some of your larger losers to come into a neutral tax situation, or even better, along the way, you might be able to trim those losers a lot sooner without having to sell your whole share position and capture those losses to offset other gains that you might have in other portfolio strategies.
Because it moves quickly. What role does ongoing professional or automated portfolio management play in this alignment, maybe?
It really comes down to the communication that you have with your advisor. You have a lot of options in front of you. We like to help guide you through what works, what would be appropriate for you. Everybody's situation is totally unique.
Just giving you a little bit more control with direct indexing. He is senior wealth advisor and certified financial planner at Annex Wealth Management. Mike Kirk, thanks for being on the show again.
Thank you.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Click that Get Started button at AnnexWealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, we've had several in-person events at multiple locations. And thank you if you've joined us recently. If not, a couple of good ones still coming up. Everything from our Women in Wealth events on what you need to know about divorce to getting ahead of memory changes and what families should know. Go to AnnexWealth.com, click on the events tab. So we'd love to see you in person. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and the Labor Department is moving to kind of open the door for 401k plans to invest in private equity. This is after years of rules that effectively kind of scared plan managers away.
Yeah, for many years, the ones who sponsor these 401k plans, right? So the employer is the sponsor, and then you have the participants. Those are the people who are working, right? So the plan sponsors, they have a fiduciary duty, and so they're regulated not just by the Securities Exchange Commission, but the Department of Labor. Oftentimes in the past, they have been really shy about trying to open up the investment menu to a broader buffet of options for people because the fiduciary risks associated with it. President Trump, a few months ago, had released an executive order instructing the Department of Labor to propose some new rules to give clarity as to, you know, can this be allowed or not? So instead of just assuming that it's not allowed, let's actually give some guidance as to what you need to do in order to fulfill your fiduciary duty. It's kind of bad timing, it feels like, because if you've been watching in the media, they've been talking a lot about private credit. Private credit is a specific type of private markets. Private markets are a type of alternative investment. So alternatives is this broad umbrella. It could be crypto, it could be private equity, it could be hedge funds. In terms of the private markets, it really just refers to things that are not publicly traded. So it's not defined by what it is so much as by what it's not. These aren't publicly traded. And so it's about what do you do? These aren't as liquid, so you can't sell them as easily. And it's also not as transparent as to what you own. So the Department of Labor is trying to create these rules, a framework to maybe give a little bit of clarity. It doesn't mean you're going to see this available in your plan. It's just basically trying to say it might go in there, but then again, it might not. It depends upon what that plan sponsor, your employer, what they think is in the best interest of the plan participants.
And it's financial planning at every level. Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client, and Annex Ignite. 9 total locations. And another reminder, because these events are popular, our Brookfield headquarters hosting a Women in Wealth live series, What Women Need to Know About Divorce, April 18th from 8 until noon at our Brookfield headquarters. Family law attorneys, financial planners, counselors, and real estate agents helping to empower women to make the best decisions during a difficult time. Glad you're here with us this morning. Time for news. Let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center.
Planning and investing insight from a fee-only fiduciary. You're listening to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. Learning Center at AnnexWealth.com has some great downloads right now. 7 retirement planning mistakes you make in your 50s, the tax return review guide, and our Women in Wealth page is up at AnnexWealth.com, including the new Women in Wealth podcast with special guests and strategies to empower women and gain greater confidence. It's a great segment this week on that show with Wendy Cousins from Make-A-Wish telling an emotional story about watching wishes being granted. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Brian, you and I were talking earlier this week about signal versus noise, and sometimes you get a little noise by what you read or where you get your news, but also that kind of leads into policy, and right now there is a big connection between politics and economics.
Yeah, and that's one of the areas that I love to study, right? It's that intersection of politics, economics, and investing. And when we think about what's going on in the political environment or the policy environment, policy can include not just what you see out of Washington, D.C. from the White House and Congress, but also what we see in terms of with monetary policy. And there is a lot of noise coming out of both of those areas, right? You know, when I listen to what President Trump has been saying about with Iran, I also understand that he's trying to lower the uncertainty for investors, but he doesn't necessarily want to eliminate the uncertainty to give like a roadmap to Iran as to what the plan is, right? I mean, if you just think about 2021, when the United States withdrew from Afghanistan, it was so telegraphed and all the criticism around how that was handled, he kind of needs to maintain some uncertainty there. And then the uncertainty that we get on the monetary policy side of things, all of the speeches from hawks and doves. So hawks, the ones who might want to hike, the doves, those who might want to hold or cut rates. And it's about who do you listen to?
Well, Chairman Powell seems to be researching squatters' rights because there is certainly a possibility that he ain't leaving.
That's right. That was one of the big messages that he gave during his press conference from the last FOMC meeting, the Federal Open Market Committee meeting, is that he has no intention of going anywhere until either Kevin Warsh, most likely, right, is going to be the next chair. So until that process is done, and also in terms of the investigation, the subpoenas that were given out in terms of the investigation as to how he's been handling the remodeling or renovation project.
And some of the senators said that needs to drop for us to push this nomination through.
That's right. And with everything that's going on with the Iran situation, I wouldn't be surprised if we do hear about maybe the investigation wrapping up, saying that maybe there wasn't grounds.
It's certainly not going to come from Pam Bondi.
No. Well, no, that was interesting too, is, you know, President Trump now going to take an opportunity to clean house a little bit. If you think about his first term, the turnover with his staff during the first year of his first administration was quite high. This, it's been actually very stable, you know, in terms of what you've seen. So now that you have seen a little bit of turnover, is that going to pick up, do a little bit of spring cleaning, perhaps?
Yeah, exactly right. And some of that cleaning could be on the new addition to the White House, right? So it seems that that's going to extend on for a while. So, yeah, we saw some changes. We saw Kristi Noem. We saw Pam Bondi. We'll see if there will be other changes amongst all of these other things that are happening here in the United States.
Maybe some spring cleaning with your portfolio after you filed your taxes. If you have a question, there is an Ask Annex button right at the top of the page at annexwealth.com. The answers to those questions are on our social media, especially our LinkedIn page. And if you missed some of our local or national TV and radio appearances during the week talking about how we're helping clients adjust to current market conditions, that's where you can see and hear clips from those appearances. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Money Talk is straight talk from a local fee-only fiduciary. It's time to know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Today we're diving into a small but fascinating detail hidden inside nearly every married couple's tax return. Who gets listed as the taxpayer and who is labeled the spouse? There is a difference. While the choice doesn't affect the amount of tax a couple pays, it does reveal a surprising amount about cultural expectations, financial dynamics, responsibilities, and how those patterns are slowly evolving. So we're taking a closer look at what the data shows, why it matters, and how it reflects the changing role of women in financial decision making. So two financial planning specialists at Annex join us, Arabella Perrins. Hi.
Hi, Joe.
And financial planning specialist Rebecca Posey.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having us.
Rebecca, let's start with you. Why does a joint tax return list one person as taxpayer accepting that responsibility and the other as the spouse?
Yeah, it's primarily for identification purposes. When we're looking at tax forms or statements in the tax return, oftentimes they'll have a T for taxpayer and S for spouse listed next to the income. It sort of ties the income to the person. So it can be very helpful for tax professionals and taxpayers, too, to see that designation on the return. So it's mostly just to keep things consistent and identifiable on the tax return.
And because it's only for identification purposes, it has no impact on the amount of tax liability that you owe. It really isn't changing numbers or the math here. It's just about identifying who is T and who is S on your tax forms. Now, Rebecca, what is your guess as to the percentage of married couples who listed the wife as the primary taxpayer in 2020?
Maybe 5-10%?
So a 2020 study revealed that only 12% of couples listed the wife first as the taxpayer. However, this is an increase from the prior study that was done in 1996, when it was only 3% of wives as taxpayers. So we have seen that number increase over the years.
That's a really low number.
When I first heard the statistic, it made me want to become taxpayer when I get married. I felt strongly about it. But after asking around, women we've asked generally don't know whether they're the taxpayer or spouse, and they don't really care either way. I think it just generally reflects the mindset about taxes. People don't want to think about it too much.
Yeah, I definitely fall into that camp. I wouldn't say it's really a priority for me. I'm just fine being the taxpayer or the spouse.
And I think there's a generational difference at play here as well. Younger wives are more likely to be listed as taxpayer, but this is still a very small difference from other generations. It just means the younger you are, the more likely you are to have the wife listed as taxpayer.
And I think with the younger generation too, oftentimes it's thought of more as whoever is the higher wage earner, whoever's earning more of the household's income is just going to be listed first.
Yeah, and that was a correlation that was noted in that aforementioned study here. Now, when they asked about this topic, professional tax preparers said that it's often easier to just have a standard method with T for taxpayer being the man and S for spouse being the woman when preparing returns. Now, Rebecca and I both here are tax preparers at Annex, and I understand where they're coming from here. When the overwhelming majority of returns I prepare follow the convention of having the man first, it can be hard to break that habit. It's just how you identify things, right? However, as a woman who wants to be taxpayer, and I'm on a tax team comprised of mostly women, I really try to avoid assuming that the taxpayer is always a man. In fact, I was preparing a return today in which a woman was taxpayer.
That's a great example, Arabella. Here at Annex, our typical assumption is the person who is most engaged with us will be the taxpayer. Whoever is dropping off the documents, answering our emails, or scheduling meetings, we're probably going to have them listed first unless we're told otherwise.
And I think the increasing number of wives filing as taxpayer reflects the growing influence of women generally within the financial sphere. The amount of wealth controlled by women is growing every year. We've seen that in a number of studies. And more women are investing in the stock market. And I personally want to see all of these numbers grow even more.
So if you are considering making a switch to being the taxpayer rather than the spouse, just know that the IRS doesn't have any rules saying you can't switch. They do advise you to be consistent with your selection. Just want to avoid any confusion, don't want to leave a lot of room for error, so just try to avoid switching back and forth a lot.
So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I want to be taxpayer, then that is within the realm of possibility.
With power comes great responsibility, right? If you're the taxpayer, you got to be responsible then, right?
Well, I mean, both spouses are on the hook. They're both liable for, you know, any number of things. It's really just for identification. So it's not like they're going to come knocking on taxpayer's door rather than spouse's door. You know, hopefully since you're married filing jointly, you're both on that same door, right?
Just who wants the paperwork and all the admin duties?
Right. How you want the letters to be addressed to you, whether you're taxpayer or your spouse. They do address their letters that way.
Thank you both so much, Rebecca Posey. Arabella Parents. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Click Get Started at AnnexWealth.com.
WTMJ, W277CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma Brand station. Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk. The Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, glad you're with us on Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. This is also a podcast on demand, so you can get this episode right at the top of the hour, wherever you get your podcasts, along with our other podcasts, and listen while you might be traveling for Easter weekend. The Annex LinkedIn and YouTube pages have the latest financial trends, strategies that could apply to you, and the events we have coming up. The Axiom, that is our newsletter with our week in review video from this show in your email every Sunday morning. Just search Annex Axiom. Our other podcasts like The Wealthiest, Ideas, Strategies, and Decisions of the Wealthy in America. Some people you might know have been on that recently. And the SWOT podcast, Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats of the Current Market, with a new episode first thing Monday mornings. And of course, our new Women in Wealth podcast featuring special guests to help empower women of all ages through genuine conversation. Some great guests on that one recently as well. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Thanks, Joe. You know, around here, people ask me, do you want the good news or the bad news? And I say, bring me the bad news right away. And so, folks, get ready for this, that during a midterm election, and we went all the way back to the 1930s, the average S&P 500 intra-year decline is 19%. And so we're about halfway there. Now, corrections, you know, they're a normal function, and that is part of how you get a good market and a healthy market, is to have these corrections. But the fact that we're only halfway there compared to other midterm election years, Brian, suggests that there's probably some more volatility in front of us.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we've been talking about since the beginning of the year, is that reminder that in a midterm election year, you oftentimes get that uncertainty. It's going to be where you get the kind of the sugar high from the new president in that first year. Then perhaps there were too high of expectations, and you see a bit of a decline in the midterm election year. As you approach the month of November, right, you do know when that election is going to be happening. Usually about October, it seems like in the data, that's when the market tends to get a little bit more traction.
Because and that's the good news.
That's the good news, is that it does tend to get a bit more traction as there becomes that clarity. Because really, when you think about just the messaging from the different parties, their campaigning, also just for some reason, it does seem like the economy, right? You typically go through these different cycles. You get the economic ups and downs, and some of the downs are more in those midterm years, often earlier in the year. So maybe that is part of what we're seeing. Of course, you can point the finger at high gasoline and oil prices, but that's not to say that even if those weren't here, that we wouldn't be experiencing some volatility.
And that probably just pulled it forward, what we're likely to see throughout the year. I remember in July 2008, of course, everybody remembers 2008. The price of oil was $150 a barrel, and I remember a bunch of bankers freaking out because that is what led into the great financial crisis. And so a combination of that $150 a barrel, but that's about where it peaked.
Yeah.
Then we were on to a rally, and as you point out, those bigger downturns suggest a bigger rebound.
That's right, and I'm glad you bring that up as far as $150 a barrel back in 2008, because that was 18 years ago. Hard to believe that it's been that long. And so if you think about the inflation adjusted price of oil, where would we have to be today to have maybe kind of that similar line in the sand if that does cause a problem? It might be closer to $200 a barrel, right?
So don't say that out loud.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. That's not an aspirational goal or a stretch goal or anything like that. But I think that is one of the things when we look back at previous peaks with some of those oil prices, it does cause some of the pain for the consumer. Right. If people change their behavior on the discretionary items, because you can't really change it immediately on oil or on gasoline.
You got to go to work. Not everyone, but you got to go to work. You got to go to the grocery store. You got to get the kids to where they got to go.
Exactly. And that's why when we talk about demand for these different things, it's all about how elastic is it? How flexible are people with spending on it? And gasoline, people are very inelastic, so they can't change the behavior that quickly. So it crowds out spending on those other items, more of the discretionary stuff. And that's probably what you're seeing in the markets, is energy stocks. They tend to do well because they get more revenue. But then you see some of the more consumer-facing ones, those can get a little bit more challenged because the consumer has to change how they're spending their money.
And that's exactly what I'd like to point out, is the fact that during a midterm election year, that's really kind of a grinder year until you get later in the year. And so investors really need to be a bit more tactical during election years. And that's really how we have set up the portfolios, especially during the ones that you're running, the core and tactical portfolio.
Yeah, and that's the way that we take a look at it, is where is it that we think that there's an opportunity to upgrade the portfolio? Kind of put it in those terms, is what are you holding now? What are some of the winners? And where can you position yourself as you go through these different events? Earlier in the show, you were talking about how you can have some of these big moves, and does it create some mispricing opportunities? And that's really what we're on the lookout for, is where are the mispricings? Markets are driven by sentiment. They're driven by people, the feelings, the emotions. And what we want to do is focus on the fundamentals and where is it that we can buy the fundamentals for a more reasonable price. And sometimes the price gets more reasonable as you go through some of these events.
All right, Professor, give us a 30-second primer on core and tactical. This does not suggest that we're day trading. There is a major difference.
Yes, there's a huge difference. So the way that the portfolios are structured for core and tactical is to have like the core of it, 70% of it roughly, about the strategic allocation. Where is it that you want to be for the long haul? You don't necessarily want to trade that, right? I mean, that is where you're trying to harvest what we call different risk premia. So are you compensated for being exposed to these different market risks? That's the core. Then the 30% is really what we're doing on the investment committee, making the decisions, monitoring the markets to see are there areas, like for example, like financials, energy, utilities, you know, robotics, different themes, different industries, where it looks like the price today is really maybe a area where you can buy something where the fundamentals in the future are going to be a lot stronger to hopefully drive some of those gains.
And that's the investment part of the portfolio management that we talk about. But we pair that, of course, with the full wealth management window of financial planning, tax planning, estate planning, all with in-house talent.
And you talk about spending for Easter weekend. Consumers are spending more per person despite the uncertainty. $195.59, a record high for Easter spending.
That's a lot of chocolate.
That's a lot of candy, a lot of Easter bunnies.
Are we chocolate or fruity candy? Which one are we?
Chocolate.
Oh, yeah, I'd have to say the fruity candy, I don't like how it gets stuck in my teeth.
All right. Have a great Easter weekend. Another episode of Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. The podcast is ready right now on the radio station website. Or just search Annex Money Talk. For Dave Spano and Dr. Brian Jacobson, I'm Joe Kraus. Have a great week. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Advice and opinions expressed during Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, are solely that of the hosts or guests of Annex Wealth Management and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.